Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for October's Neurology Club webinar. I'm very pleased to welcome our speaker for today, European and RCVS specialist in veterinary neurology, Thomas Shaw. Thank you, Thomas. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thanks, Sammy Jo. Thanks for coming to this webinar. So it's about neurological episodes in dogs, about how it's really not about having an MRI scanner. So just a brief overview of what we're talking about here. We're talking about episodes that, as a neurologist, I'm often presented with cases where they've been referred, and it's usually a dog that's had some, for want of a better word, some funny turns. Okay, and I use that phrase because I've never been able to come up with a better way of describing them. When owners say to me, "Oh, my dog has an episode that looks like this," and they describe it having a very sudden onset, so the dog's being completely normal before it started, and then afterwards going completely back to normal straight away. Sometimes I say to them, "Do you mean your dog had a funny turn?" And they say, "Yes, they did." People seem to know what that means. So it's not a very scientific word. I think it's quite a useful one to describe the topic we're talking about today. So we're talking about dogs which are having episodes that last for seconds to hours. Okay, and then the really important feature of these is that these dogs are completely normal between these episodes. And what we're not talking about here are very clearly defined problems. Okay, so a dog with a generalized seizure. Let's play you this video here. Dog is clearly having a seizure. Okay, I think most owners would know that that is a seizure. The dog is having tonic-clonic convulsive movements. Jaw movements, often they urinate and defecate. Episode's brief, it lasts for a few minutes usually, and then they have a postictal phase afterwards. We're also not talking about dogs that are abnormal between their episodes. Okay, so if an owner says, "My dog has funny turns," and then in between the episodes they're just not themselves, they're not behaving appropriately, their personality's changed, maybe they've lost some of their toilet training and started urinating, defecating in the house, things like this. These are evidence of a persistent problem affecting the brain, and we're not talking about those sorts of things today. Another change might be with gait. The owners might say, "Oh, my dog has a funny walk it didn't used to have." Again, we're talking about dogs that walk normally, act normally, behave normally, and then have funny turns. And the other thing we're not talking about is any evidence of structural nervous system disease. And what I mean by that really is an abnormal neurological exam. Okay, so there's sorts of things like losing a Mennish response in one eye, having evidence of circling or ataxia. Okay, anything like that, we'd again not consider to be a true sort of funny turn. Those dogs have some kind of nervous system problem that is persistent. And then we're dealing with dogs here, which are really just young, healthy dogs. You know, apart from the episodes they're having, apart from their funny turns, they are completely, within the age range we would not associate with other diseases. So over 6 years, obviously, we start to think of things like brain tumors in dogs with neurological signs. Under 6 months, puppies are very hard to evaluate neurologically, and they may also have increased incidence of congenital brain abnormalities such as hydrocephalus that might cause them to have funny turns as well. We're also going to talk about seizures as part of this talk, and that 6 months to 6 years age bracket is very important because that's also the age at which we tend to see idiopathic epilepsy. There's a few caveats here. Okay, it's not a straightforward topic. It can be a tricky area of neurology, and that often the really difficult thing is you're presented with a dog where the owner said they've had this really dramatic funny turn, and then they've come around and they were normal beforehand, and now they're back to normal. And you examine the dog, and they're normal. all you've got to go on is the owner's description. And if you're lucky, they got a video, but you often have to ask them to do that when the dog next has an episode. Okay. But it's an entirely subjective area of neurology, this. Okay. I'm just going to show you another video here. This dog here, its owner said it was having funny turns, and when I first examined it, it appeared normal. And now look at this video. It's standing with its head pressed against something. In a moment, it's going to start moving around. Gets out of his basket very slowly, has his head down, has his head tilted to the side. Has this dog got abnormal mentation? Was he head pressing before? Has he got vestibular syndrome with his head tilted to the side? Doesn't seem quite himself. You could make an argument that he's not quite all there, this dog, that he's not responsive to his owners. This dog had neck pain. He's got a slip disc in his neck and he's got neck pain. But the video is giving us some misleading information. I only detected his dog neck pain on about the second or third time I examined it. It's also a topic where there's some disagreement amongst neurologists about, particularly about what constitutes difference between movement disorders and seizures, which is something we're going to talk about later. And if the same neurologists, if you had several neurologists looking at the same video, often you'd get a different interpretation. And again, it comes back to the fact this is quite a subjective area. The other thing which plays into it is this thing I call neurophobia, which is common amongst referring vets and also amongst owners. The reason that people get so worried, I think, is that they see episodes, they don't know what they are, they think they might be seizures. Often there's a worry about the worst case scenario, something like a brain tumor. So because of that, I think it kind of sometimes clouds people's judgments and makes them worried about things that if it was any other subject they would not be worried about. And it means also we get a lot of advice requests about things like this. People worried about dogs having funny turns, what it means. I completely understand it. There are some rare disorders as well, and they do exist. I'm not covering these really rare topics in this webinar. I'll just show you this video here. This is a dog, an English Bull Terrier that the owners perceived had episodes of pain, but when I saw the video here, it's clear that he has some kind of difficulty walking, and he's kind of stuck in this like robotic stalling gait, where his feet get almost stuck to the ground. Quite bright and alert otherwise. The owner said it happens every time he gets up from rest, and often when he walks under a house plant. This is a condition called deer stalking, which we don't fully understand. Some people think it's a seizure disorder. I think it's probably a movement disorder. It's only in English Bull Terriers. If you go onto YouTube, you'll see dozens of videos of English Bull Terriers walking like this, and their owners think it's kind of cute and don't see a problem with it. It's some kind of neurological condition. It doesn't seem to respond to any treatment. It's very poorly understood. And it's only in that breed. So things like this, I'm not going to talk about because the list of things goes from the floor to the ceiling. But we're going to talk about five conditions here. Okay, I'll go through them shortly, and they're going to cover about 80% of all dogs that are having these funny turns. Okay, so what I'm hoping here is that we'll be covering enough ground really to develop a system for you to figure out how to deal with the majority of cases and which ones need referring and which ones are more straightforward. And even if you can't be sure about things, I'm hoping I'll be able to give you like a rational approach to this topic. So a very common thing that I hear is when dogs have funny turns, people say, "Well, I'd like to refer it because I don't have an MRI scanner. I can't get to the bottom of it. You have an MRI scanner. You can find out what's wrong with them." And I say, "Well, you know what? The vast majority of these dogs actually don't need an MRI scan to figure out what's wrong with them, okay? Because it's very rare that they have structural brain disease, things like tumors, inflammatory disease. In these dogs, remember this special group of dogs we're talking about, young, otherwise healthy dogs having episodes that last just a few seconds to a few minutes, and then they're back to normal." And they're normal when you examine them. Very rarely have anything wrong in an MRI. Okay. Let's have a look at the video here. This dog had funny turns, normal in between, normal exam. And it described, well, what we're seeing here, pacing around the room, not responding to them, occasionally getting stuck in corners of the room. Clearly, it's mentally not normal, this dog. And then after a few minutes, or half an hour, they said, I think it was, this dog would be back to its normal self, often shortly after having food. And you see it's pressing its head into a door. This dog had hepatic encephalopathy caused by a poor systemic shunt. So toxins, which you know normally get filtered out by the liver, are poisoning the brain, causing a functional problem for the brain. And this dog had a diagnosis based on blood tests and a CT scan of its abdomen. I'll show you another video here. This is a dog having collapse episodes where it could walk but was very uncoordinated. First you think it might be seizing, but it gets up, looks around, it's aware of what's going on, this dog, but it can't walk. Or at least it can't walk very well. And then it starts moving off, and you see, look at these exaggerated movements here. Picks its feet up really high. The owners describe these sorts of things happening multiple times a day, lasting a few minutes at a time, being straight back to normal, often brought on by exercise or excitement. This dog has a movement disorder, and we'll talk more about those later. Again, didn't need an MRI to diagnose the problem. Movement disorders, there's really no good evidence that it's related to kind of any structural problem within the brain. I've yet to find a dog with a movement disorder have an MRI abnormality. So those were both diagnoses that were really reached without an MRI scan. Okay. So yeah, but the neurological cases need an MRI to get diagnosis, don't they? Wrong, at least for our topic today. Might be right for other areas of neurology, like evidence of structural brain disease, like circling blindness, things like that. But we expect normal MRIs in nearly all of these patients. An MRI, the other thing to realize is that MRI is not an exhaustive rule-out test for all neurological disease. Lots of neurological conditions appear normal in an MRI, even though microscopically there's a problem. So the hepatic encephalopathy is a good example. If you chop the brain up and look at it down a microscope, the cells are damaged, they're not well, but on an MRI scan it looks beautifully normal. It's not true to say there's never any point in performing an MRI in the dogs we're talking about here, but it usually comes at the end of a chain of tests, okay? And it's just like any other diagnostic test. You've got to think about your differential diagnosis first and consider the likelihood of each differential, okay? And then you've got to think about which diseases you're kind of diagnose or rule out, by performing each test that you could perform, okay? And then select your tests based on which you think are the best tests to run. So you base that on how reliable the test is, how sensitive is it, how likely is it to detect the problem, how specific is it, how reliable is any abnormal finding. So I'll talk a bit about classifying these funny turns. Okay, as I said, there's not many conditions we're going to talk about, but they basically fall into two brackets here. Okay, so we've got these conditions here, which are really just like an altered mental state. It's the best way of describing them. And as we saw in that video, a dog with hepatic encephalopathy, a metabolic problem is one possible cause of an altered metabolic mental state. Okay, and the other cause is a behavioural disorder. Okay, obviously these are quite different things, but essentially when you have a lowered level of consciousness, so the animal is not as alert as it should be, that is more consistent with a metabolic problem affecting the brain. When you've got an animal that is performing a repetitive, stereotypical behaviour, or it's fixated on doing something over and over again, that is more consistent with a behavioral disorder, which was sort of giving the label OCD now in dogs, but and that's an evolving field in behavior medicine. And then we've got the other conditions here that really just fall under the bracket of altered movement. Okay, so we've got the movement disorders, which we'll talk about, okay, and we've got idiopathic head tremors, eyes disappear there, which we'll look at as well. All right. Now, where these things come together and overlap, okay, seizures, they can have any degree of altered mental state or even a normal mental state. They can have any degree of altered movement or indeed no change to that. So we'll go through first exactly how do we determine if it's a seizure or not, because that's really the most important question in all of this. Dog's having a funny turn. Is it a seizure or is it not a seizure? Oh, sorry, just before we get onto that, I'll just run through a few things. This isn't a comprehensive list. As I mentioned already, there are rare disorders. Maybe 20% of funny turns or something rare I haven't included here. And they include vestibular paroxysms, generalized tremor syndromes, things like exercise-induced collapse syndrome, which is recognized in Labradors and Border Collies. You've got myoclonic problems as well, which are, again, are rare and only really in Jack Russell Terriers. And then you've got sleep disorders, which are extremely rare. So, involuntary movements, as I say, are difficult to classify, okay, but in a way it doesn't matter because the classification isn't too important for the diagnosis. And again, we'll talk a bit more about that later. When you have any two of these things, combination of facial twitching, drooling, alternation, and involuntary movements, I tend to say, yes, it's a seizure. When we say, no, something isn't a seizure, again, sometimes it's easy. If we have an episode of a dog that has difficulty walking or moving its legs with increased muscle tone, but completely normal mentation and no other signs of seizure, we tend to say that's a movement disorder. And then episodes of like a fixated stereotypical behavior pattern that repeats, again, without any other signs of a seizure, compulsive behavior disorder until proven otherwise. And then there's the maybes, and they're tricky, okay? It could be any one of the things I mentioned there, the facial twitching, drooling, alternation, voluntary movements. You can see what the differential diagnosis is there. But these are things where you may want to contact a neurologist to run through things, because it can be quite a tricky area when there's only one thing that's obvious. And the last thing, which is a maybe, is an idiopathic head tremor. Now, I only say that's a maybe because it's controversial about whether dogs that are having these idiopathic head tremors are having seizures or not. And it's based on EEG findings. So where you measure brain waves in dogs that are having these head tremors, you can sometimes find abnormalities. But the thing is, you can often find the same abnormalities in apparently normal dogs. So it's not clear if dogs with idiopathic head tremors are seizuring or not. What we do know, and we'll talk about later as well, is that they don't seem to respond to anticonvulsant therapy. So in a way, it doesn't really matter. I think this idiopathic head trauma probably belongs more in the no camp over to the left here. Okay, but I put it as a maybe because many neurologists will say they're seizures. All right, I have another little video here. We'll go through some examples, things that might be seizures. Dog's having funny turns. French bulldog, I think, it presented with these episodes lasting a few minutes at a time, normal in between. You see it's got involuntary movements of its right front leg. It's holding it up the ground. And it's facial twitching. And it's drooling as well. The dog is having a seizure. It has three of the four things I mentioned with seizures. The only thing that's normal about it is it doesn't have altered mentation. Look at the next video. Same dog again that I showed you earlier. Clearly has altered mentation. It doesn't have any other signs of a seizure. It's walking around, it's no involuntary movements, no facial twitching. This dog has a metabolic brain disorder. Next video. This little dog here, young Chihuahua, again having funny turns where it kind of can't walk. It's very bright, no other signs of a seizure. You see all of its legs are affected. Occasionally it will sort of fall on its side and you'll see it has increased muscle tone. Its limbs are being pulled towards its body. jerky, stiff movements. This dog has a movement disorder. Next video, please. This dog is having an idiopathic head tremor. It's very distinctive. It's fine, rapid movements of the head. No other signs of dysphagia. The owner says this can last for quite a long time as well, longer than a seizure normally lasts. And the last video. Maybe that was the last one. Oh, yeah. Right, so we'll move on to the other side. Let's say you're still not sure. How can you figure out if a dog's having a seizure or not? There are some questions you can ask. How long does the episode last? It is often a really useful thing, because when it lasts more than 5 minutes, and the owners can be sure about that, because you've said, have you looked at a clock? And they say, yes, I looked at a clock when it started, and it was 10 minutes before it finished. It is unlikely to be a seizure, if that is really true. Often owners get really, they lose track of time when an animal's having a funny turn, because they're so worried about their pet, they'll think it went on for 10 minutes, even though it was 2 minutes. You have to take what they're saying with a grain of salt. But if they say, oh no, I looked at the clock at the start and in the end, it was definitely more than 5 minutes, not likely to be a seizure. Seizures are usually self-limiting, over in 2 to 3 minutes, more than 5 minutes, unlikely. Another really good question is, can you distract your dog for an episode? Because if they can, it shouldn't really be a seizure. Dogs having seizures are locked into the seizure. They shouldn't be able to override it, okay? Oftentimes, if I'm not sure if the dog has a compulsive behavior disorder, I'll ask this question, because if they say, yes, I can stop my dog doing it by getting a treat or something, and then I'll believe that it's not a seizure. You can often ask owners to do this as well. You say, okay, I'm not sure what your dog's doing, but go home next time it has an episode, get us a favorite treat, see what happens. You can ask if anything triggers it. If it's triggered by stress or excitement or exertion, again, it's not likely to be a seizure. Nearly all seizures happen from rest or when they're sleeping. Things like movement disorders are often triggered by those things. And another good question is what to do afterwards, because if they do seem postictal, sleepy, hungry, etc., they are probably having a seizure. But if they're normal, straight back to normal, it still could be a seizure or anything else. Getting a video is really important. I think, The important bit about getting a video is to ask the owners to stand back while their dog's having an episode. So they get too close with the camera, often they want to like stroke the dog on the head, try and calm it down and things while they're videoing it. You won't get a good video that way. Best thing for them to do is stand back and take a video. And if they can, even have someone else in the room, get a treat or a toy for the dog, and try and interact with it, try and make it walk around. Because you can learn a lot by watching a dog trying to walk during one of these funny turns. You may even then be able to diagnose a movement disorder, which would be very hard to do otherwise. Contacting a neurologist, see if you get to your end of all this and you're still not sure. And then treatment trials. But I would recommend contacting a neurologist before doing a treatment trial, because they are really actually very difficult to do. And the reason for that is that most of these diseases that cause funny turns, particularly epilepsy, it's a waxing waning disease. The frequency goes up and down over time, okay, like this graph. And if you see the dog when the owner brings it in, usually it's when it just had a spate of them, so they're in a more sort of a worse phase. And then over time, obviously, they're going to get better, because it's going to go from being frequent to less frequent no matter what you do. Okay, so even with placebo controlled trials, when they give dogs placebos, we tend to see a decrease in episode frequency over time, just based on this waxing waning phenomenon. It's called return to mean. This is a really nice graph that an owner made for me. I think the owner was a statistician, and it was a dog having funny turns. I wasn't sure if they have seizures or a movement disorder. And we documented how frequent they were. We see the cumulative incidents, incident-free days, which is in blue. So she went, Bella went quite a long time without an episode here, and she had one or two here. And she had a few days without, and she had one there, and then a couple of days out, and one there. And she had a spate of them there, and they built up in frequency. And then we started treatment. Now, what happened there was interesting because we started levetiracetam, which should be very fast acting, but she continued to have frequent episodes for a few more weeks. And then they gradually sort of spaced out, and then she had a very long period without any. So I said, I thought that because levetiracetam should work very quickly, this is probably just the natural progression of what was going on, going from a frequent phase. Less frequent phase of the disease. We stopped the levetiracetam, and actually, she didn't have any more episodes. So I was very happy to say it wasn't a levetiracetam working; it was just a natural progression. Okay, let's talk about idiopathic head tremors now. Remember the video earlier of the dog having an idiopathic head tremor? They can be very frequent, these things. They can be multiple times a day, but they can also be sporadic, so they can remission periods that last for a long time, months or sometimes years. And the episodes typically last seconds to minutes, but they're very varied in their frequency. They have a pretty unclear etiology. As I was saying earlier, we don't know if they're a seizure or some kind of to malfunction. By that I mean the muscles in the neck have stretch receptors just like any other muscle in the body. And there's a theory that if there's a some kind of pathology affecting them, that the they don't work and you end up with this oscillation in the muscle contractions. But they do seem to be benign, and there's no evidence that they progress to generalized seizures. And actually, they have no impact on dogs' quality of life most of the time. I can't even remember a case where an owner came back to me and said, "My dog's just not coping with this." They can usually go about, eating and drinking whilst they're having their head tremor. And treatment doesn't usually work. So, considering that the treatments on offer, the anti-seizure medications, typically have side effects and potential serious complications, at least with phenobarbital, we don't usually recommend treating them. Move on to. So I'll show you this other video to show you it's not always an up and down tremor. So you can have up and down, so yes, head tremors, and you can have horizontal no head tremors as well. So with movement disorders, there are various forms of various names, okay? It's a fairly new area of neurology, and 5 years ago, I think we weren't really diagnosing very many of these. And I think the thing that's changed, namely, is that dog owners now mostly have smartphones, so they're able to record their dog's funny turns and send us the videos, and we can much more reliably diagnose movement disorders when we've seen a video. Various names. Paroxysmal dyskinesia is probably the main one, but really that just means an episodic movement disorder. So I don't tend to use that phrase too much. I usually just say movement disorder. Now, like I said, various forms of it, but the unifying thing is that they usually have a very sudden onset, difficulty walking, and increased muscle tone. And they're usually triggered by excitement, but not always, or stress or heat. Often they're out on a walk when it happens. They usually, but not always, call it exaggerated limb movements, but sometimes they actually go stiff and they can't move their legs at all. Tremors are sometimes a part of it as well. It can last for a few seconds to over an hour. And the key thing here is they should not cause any change to the dog's mentation. They should be responsive. Most dogs are looking at their owners and worried about what's going on. Some dogs go off and hide while it's happening. Shouldn't have any drooling. I think drooling is actually, during a funny turn, is actually a very good sign of a seizure. Shouldn't have any facial twitching as well. And if a dog has involuntary movements of all limbs but doesn't become laterally recumbent, in other words, they remain able to stand up, you can tell from a video or the owner's description that they have all of their legs affected. It's highly suggestive of a movement disorder. I think it's quite difficult for a seizure to cause that because seizures that involve all limbs, involuntary movements in all limbs, should affect both halves of the brain. And when they affect both halves of the brain, I think they should really render a dog unconscious. Have a look at some videos now. So this is a nice video of a dog with a movement disorder. It's increased tone and flexion of those limbs, involuntary movements. Dog's looking around, it's responsive. No other signs of a seizure. They often try to get up, but they can't. Or if they can get up, they walk very badly. Next video, please. This is a lovely video. This is a Labrador with paroxysmal dyskinesia. You can see how he's writhing and having. It's involuntary limb movements. It's also involuntary movements of its trunk as well because of the writhing movements. In humans, they call this athetosis. Again, he's aware of what's going on. He's trying to walk, but he can't. Next video, please. This is another Chihuahua. Again, bright and alert, trying to walk. Increased tone and legs, but has trouble standing because the involuntary movement means it loses its footing and falls down. This dog actually had treatment for epilepsy for years until I saw this video. The owners were saying that the treatment for epilepsy just wasn't working. But it's something to consider when you have a dog that's, say, refractory epileptic, to ask the question, could it be a movement disorder? Ask them to get a video of an episode. And if it looks like this, I think you're dealing with a movement disorder. Next video, please. This is an example of a dog doesn't. This dog isn't really having any involuntary movements. At least they're not easy to see. It's just stiff and unable to stand up, but very alert. And it's all four of its legs are affected. So again, it's quite hard for this sort of thing to be a seizure. If a dog can't stand up and all four of its limbs are affected from a seizure, they really should be unconscious. It's actually quite typical of what Labradors look like when they have movement disorders. So many breed-related variants are described. Some of them have got funny names because they're quite old diseases. You've got episodic falling or deer stalking in Cavaliers. Episodic falling is not really a good description because they usually fall over. They usually just walk strangely, and deer stalking is probably a better descriptor because it describes them sort of a low, wide-based stance, a low head carriage. There is a DNA test for that one. There's an epileptoid cramping, or sometimes called Spike's disease in Border Terriers. Again, the name epileptoid cramping is an old name. It's before you knew it was a movement disorder. It's not epilepsy. It's got nothing to do with epilepsy. There's Scotty cramps. Again, the cramping is, again, back in the day, they thought it was a muscular problem that the dogs were getting cramps. Actually, movement disorders are a problem in the brain, and part of the brain called the basal ganglia that control movements. And then Labrador and Jack Russell variants are described recently. Now, the important thing here is that in nearly all idiopathic, in fact, the evidence that they're caused by things like brain tumors or encephalitis, it's really not there. That there are reports of dogs having MRI abnormalities and movement disorders, but these abnormalities weren't really in the part of the brain we'd expect to cause a movement disorder. So I think they might well have been just like a red herring. I've never just found a dog with a movement disorder and have an MRI abnormality. There's an idea that in border terriers it might be related to gluten intolerance. Another idea borrowed from humans, and there is actually some good evidence behind that. So if you do have a dog with a movement disorder, particularly if it's a border terrier, it might be worth doing a diet trial on it. Although, just like with skin problems, you probably have to do the diet trials for a long time to see if it worked or not. Treatment is controversial, and the reason for that is that there's no good evidence that any one treatment will work. Okay. And also that you kind of expect to see side effects with treatment. This is a benign condition. It doesn't progress to, dogs can't die from it. It's not like epilepsy. It shouldn't progress. The frequency just naturally goes up and down over time. And in one study, they looked at a large cohort of Labradors and Jack Russells and found that actually 70% of them got better without any treatment anyway. So I tend not to treat these dogs. These are the medications that are described anecdotally as being effective. Acetazolamide, fluoxetine, so Prozac, clonazepam, so benzodiazepine, even phenobarbital, strangely. But I tend to reserve treatment for the dogs that are just having very frequent episodes that are affecting their quality of life. When there's no alternative, really. Okay, let's talk about compulsive behavioral disorders. I think these are actually pretty common. Many forms of them are described, okay? Repetitive behavior, I guess, is the main theme here. Repetitive grooming, licking, vocalization, like howling, spinning and tail chasing. The most common one that we see as neurologists is this sort of fly catching syndrome. I'll just show you a little video here. Oh no, before you get onto that, this dog is a tail chaser. Okay. These can be tricky ones actually, because the question here is could there be something wrong with their tail? So, many times I've ended up doing an MRI scan of a dog's tail to prove there's nothing wrong with it. Next video, please. Okay, so this is the sort of thing we're talking about, fly catching. This dog is repetitively looking up, something above it. They don't always bite at it or try and catch with their mouths, but they frequently do. The thing that defines fly catching is that they should fix their eyes on a pointed space, looking at some imaginary object. Next video, please. It can often be quite dramatic. This dog is actually charging towards the thing it's biting at. The owner was very worried about this dog becoming aggressive while it was doing it, but actually it never directed it towards a person. So the thing with these is that they're very variable actually in frequency and duration, and can sometimes bite in any direction, up, down, left, right. Sometimes they don't bite, they just look at objects. Sometimes it's described as bug following because they'll look down at the ground and follow sort of imaginary objects and crawling across the ground. We don't know what the cause of this is. My best guess is that it's actually a behavioral problem like obsessive compulsive disorder, where they feel a compulsion to do this sort of thing over and over again. There's a theory that it's actually a partial seizure, like a seizure that causes hallucinations. They're biting at things that are hallucinating, or looking at things that are hallucinating. In one study, however, it took a large cohort of dogs doing this, and they did a treatment trial, two different medications, and they crossed over. And what they found was interesting because some dogs responded to phenobarbital. You might think, oh, well, maybe it's a seizure. But all of the dogs that were treated with fluoxetine, which is this behavior modifying drug, responded. So, because of that, I think that these dogs are actually having behavioral problems. And what I tend to do before I do any investigations or MRIs or anything, I tend to send them to a behaviorist first and say, look, if the behaviorist thinks it's a behavioral disorder, I'm not going to disagree with them. And I think your dog should have behavior therapy. And most owners are happy to go along with that. And most behaviorists are happy to go along with that. Just occasionally you get one that says, oh, you know, I want this dog to have an MRI to rule out problems before I start doing behavior therapy with it. And I say, well, that's fine with me. And then it's easy. But what I don't want to do is do things like anesthetize them, MRI them, CSF them, give them anti-epileptic drugs, and then send them to the behaviorist. Because often once all those things are done, it's actually affected the dog's behavior further, and it makes life more difficult for them. As I was saying, most likely, I think it's an obsessive compulsive disorder. Okay, so let's talk about our approach to investigations with these dogs with funny turns. The first question is it a seizure? And if yes, it's a seizure, then because we're dealing with young, healthy dogs that are normal on neurological exam, normal between their episodes, in the 6 month to six age, 6 years age range, we can presumptively say it's idiopathic epilepsy based on that. It is actually very unlikely to be any other type of structural epilepsy or anything. Things like brain tumors and things like that are very unlikely in these dogs. But we usually do some blood tests anyway because we don't want to miss an extracranial cause of the seizures for lack of doing a few blood tests. And then we have the option of doing an MRI scan and CSF tap just to make sure. And then at the end, our diagnosis. Okay, that's the dogs that we think are seizuring. For the ones that aren't, well, then it just depends on what we think is going on. If we think it's a movement disorder, then really, I don't really do any tests other than potentially do an MRI scan and CSF analysis to rule out structural brain disease. But it's only if owners are very keen to do that, because, like I said earlier, they are very unlikely to have anything wrong. If we think it's a head tremor, I think the same thing applies really. You can refer them to a neurologist, they're very characteristic. Unless dogs show signs of it, you know, definite signs of a seizure, I think it's reasonable, again, not to investigate. And then there's these, you know, fixated behavior, compulsive behaviors. You know, we can go ahead and refer them to a behaviorist first. I think that's probably the If a behaviorist is happy to see them, that's the most logical course of action. And they can come to a neurologist afterwards, again, if the behaviorist isn't. And then dogs that have altered mental state, like the metabolic problems we were talking about earlier, these need blood tests, really. And then it's the same pathway of what as what I described for seizures. If those blood tests are normal, then we're looking for a structural brain abnormality after that. So it's an MRI and CSF tap. Possibly getting a diagnosis. You know, sometimes with these dogs that are having funny turns, we don't figure it out. But you know, we have essentially a limited range of tests. So with the, as I was saying, we in these dogs that are having funny turns, we think might be a metabolic problem affecting the brain. Okay. I recommend the Bahla system because we want to be as sure as we can be that it's not a poor systemic shunt. Okay. If I had a dog that was having these funny turns. I'd had just a human biochem done that was normal. Okay, it was referred to me, but then it's a workup for these funny turns or seizures. I would then say, we really need to do a bilateral stim before the MRI. The reason for that is the MRI we're doing just to make sure. We think that the MRI is going to be normal. We're doing it just to make sure. It's not logical to take the same approach with the blood tests. We need to do all the tests we can do to be as sure as we can be that it's not a shunt. Okay. If you can do a investigation for hyperglycemia as well, although in dogs in the age range we're talking about 6 months to 6 years, the major cause of hyperglycemia being an insulinoma, so a neoplastic process, is pretty unlikely at that age. But if you are going to investigate a dog for hyperglycemic episodes, it makes sense to receive to have them admitted to your practice when they've been starved overnight, maybe in the morning, so for 12 hours, and then keep them starved throughout the day and do a glucose curve on them. And the reason for that is that blood glucose in dogs that are going hyperglycemic can often go up and down. So if you do a one-off check, it'll be frequently normal, and you'll frequently miss the fact that they're going hyperglycemic. The only reliable way to pick it up, I think, is to do about 3 to 6 glucose readings with like a glucometer, just an ear prick sample or something, every couple of hours throughout the day while they're starved. If you're checking for hypocalcemia, really an ionized calcium is better than a total one. If you have an in-house machine that can do that, like an iStat, I think that's absolutely fine. And the other things we're looking for, really, like I said, it's a short list: increased or lowered sodium, azotemia, and then conditions that cause change in blood viscosity, such as a high PCV or triglyceride level. You can do a hematology and biochemistry for that. Just bear in mind, it doesn't need to be a particularly extended panel if you're using an external lab, which is probably a good idea because the machines are better validated and more reliable. You don't have to order like things like PLI and TLI and cobalamin and all these things. So, we're only looking for the basic things here, Douglas. Okay, and that's the end. Thanks for bearing with me. Sorry, it cut out a couple of times. I was told this is a more stable Wi-Fi connection than it's turned out to be. If you've got any questions, please fire away.
Hi, Tom. There are no questions at the moment, but if there are any questions and anyone would like to send them in, then please feel free to send them to my email address and then I can pass them on. On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Thomas for an excellent webinar today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.